Hello, my choicers. Welcome to Choices Thursday. Thank you for making great choices and listening to Choices. I'm your host, Christine Choi. You can find Choices on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, and anywhere else you find podcasts. Today's episode is my interview with one of my oldest and dearest friends, my non-blood brother, Mike Wang. He's talking to me from Culver City, Southern California. We talk about his life, moving to a foreign country, and having to acclimate to a new culture, and also getting into a lot of trouble with the law as a young man. And of course, how he's moved past those hardships and continue looking forward to what is to come in his future. I really hope you guys enjoy. Here's the interview.
Hi.
Hey, how's it going, Christine?
Good, how are you?
You know, just another day, doing good.
There you go.
Yep.
So I want to talk about how we met and our friendship. Well, I mean, how we met's very uneventful almost. We just met because kids from our school used to do group chats on AIM. That's AOL Instant Messenger for those who don't know what that is. And yeah, I mean, we used to just have like 40 people in a chat room and that's how we made friends.
Yeah, basically.
And at that point, we didn't go to the same school, right?
I think, was it seventh grade?
Seventh grade.
Definitely was at the same school for a second.
Okay. Oh, and then did you leave?
Yeah, and then I left.
Oh, okay.
Eighth grade wasn't present, but seventh grade I was there. I think we were friends then.
Okay, cool. But it took us a while to actually be friends in real life.
Yeah.
I mean, we seriously used to send each other little blobs all day. Remember the blobs?
Yeah, it's like the equivalent back then of memes, basically.
Yeah.
Right?
That's so funny. I guess so. That's exactly what it is. Because they're all different expressions and whatnot.
No, 100%.
Yeah. And
that's, I think, how we started meeting. I think at that time you were hanging out with Catherine, and now I was friends with David Pack.
Yeah.
And I think I saw a mutual connection there, too.
There you go. That's probably how we met.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one time, I still hadn't, like, met you in person, I guess, and I was walking by a classroom that you were sitting in or something, and I, like, walked past you, and I was, like, waving, kind of just like, bye. And that was it.
Yeah, that sounds like you.
Yep. Sounds like me. So I honestly don't really know when we started being really good friends. Was it sophomore year?
Maybe even before that, I feel
like. Yeah, I feel like it was before that, but distinctly remembering us being really, really close, I think back to sophomore year.
Sophomore year is definitely that year for sure.
Yeah. So, well, with that said, let's get into our funniest or fondest memory of each other. You can go first.
I mean, there's so many good ones, Christine. I don't know. I would have to say one of my favorite memories is we were at a house party for Andy's birthday.
Oh, my God.
It's pretty crowded and probably like 11:30 at night.
Oh, no. Okay.
It's pretty loud and the cops decided to invite themselves to the party and try to shut everything down. We were probably like 18, so none of us was supposed to be drinking. None of us was supposed to be smoking.
Oh, my God.
And I think all of us freaked out a little bit. Christine the most freaked out by trying to hide from the police officers while everybody else is getting escorted out. All the party people, they got told to sit on the grass, basically as the cops searched the house. We were out there for maybe 5-10 minutes, just, you know, waiting for the cops to kind of do their thing and leave. And all of a sudden we hear from a police officer, hey, we found a girl in the chimney. In a fireplace. And we're just like, wait, what? What is that? What do you mean there's a girl in the fireplace? And it just turned out to be Christine.
Okay. So to be fair, I was not inside the fireplace. I hid behind a couch. And the couch just happened to be in front of a fireplace. That's my story and I'm sticking to it.
And since then, that story...
Yes.
Santa Claus definitely stuck around for a little bit.
Oh, and how fitting, because my birthday is the day after Christmas.
Yeah, there you go.
So it was, Oh, fun fact, everybody. Mike and I have each other's half birthdays.
Yes, we do.
Fun fact. Cool. Mine is from high school. This was the very first time that I smoked weed. And I think we smoked and then went to my house. And We had one of those dish chairs with the little cushion in the middle of the wooden webby looking thing, whatever.
Right.
And we were all just kind of sitting around hanging out. I was sitting in my little dish chair, comfortable. And I may have been high, but it was my first time and I had no idea if I was high or not. I thought I wasn't. And I just see Mike laughing and he just like, "You are a queen Korean spider." And he just kept repeating himself that I'm the queen Korean spider. Yeah, I still can't forget about that. That actually, I mentioned that to you recently, right?
I think that story comes up just about every time we meet.
Yeah. Ah, well, I loved it.
Well, to be fair, that chair, you don't see it everywhere.
Okay.
I think you had mentioned that it's not like a common chair, and it looked like, as you're sitting down, there was just a web behind you built out real nicely.
Okay, so it was the early 2000s. I think that chair existed everywhere.
I didn't have one of those chairs for sure.
No, you did not. But anyway, yeah, those are some funny memories. But aside from that, obviously, we've gone through a lot of thick and thin, good moments and bad moments. And that really made us into the friends that we are. So I'm really glad to have you in my life and to watch your life progress.
Yeah. Yeah, likewise. Yeah. Definitely a lot of fun times.
Yeah. Okay, so let's get into some games.
Okay.
The first game is called WWYD, What Would You Do? So you are given a power to cause one minor inconvenience to your worst enemy's life for the rest of their days here on Earth. What would you do?
That's a tough question. I'm not really a witch bad upon people type of guy.
But
I don't
it's
know.
Like one minor annoyance. It's like nothing like, oh, I wish harm on anything, but it's just like,
like it's just one little thing that could bug you forever.
Yeah.
Like an itch that you can't scratch somewhere or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty annoying itself. Gosh, I don't know. If I really could make somebody really miserable for the rest of their life, I would take away the ability to have a car. No car for that guy. Has to walk.
Yeah, but what if they live in New York?
You could have a car in New York.
Yeah, but
In LA is tough.
Okay, so you would place them in LA and not give them a car?
Yeah, that would be terrible. That would be the worst thing for that guy ever.
That is true, because LA public transportation is garbage.
LA, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, that's funny. Okay, next game is going to be 10-2. We are each going to give 5 random words, totaling 10 words, and we're going to each come up with a short story having to do with those words. It can contain all 10. It doesn't have to. And we'll try our best to pull it from our own lives. But it can be just a realistic story if you'd like. So you go ahead with 5 words, please.
Okay. All right. 5 words. Phones, beaches, food, sunshine, and traffic.
Okay. I'm going to do Christmas, garbage, airplane, pet, and rain.
Well, were you supposed to be writing these down?
No, I'll send it to you.
Okay, perfect. I already forgot my words.
You ready?
Let's do it. Okay. All right. So during Christmas, there's always a lot of garbage toys that kids get, like airplanes or bad cell phones. When kids, all they want is to avoid the rain, hang out by the beach, under the sunshine, eating food, and something with traffic. I don't know.
That was good.
No, that was terrible.
That was a story.
Yeah, sure. You try. I see you.
Yeah, I'm going to actually do one. I think I actually have something here finally.
All right.
So this story, once again, will be about my move to New York. When I was living in California, I was really starting to get sick of the traffic. And even though I lived pretty close to Sunshine and the beach, that would take another hour and a half rather than the 45 minutes it used to be to get to the beach. So there was really no point of like, oh, it's beautiful, let's stay in California. And so I hopped on an airplane and decided to go to New York and ended up spending Christmas in New York, and I didn't go home. I was really hoping for a white Christmas, because that's what I remember of growing up in Korea. We used to always have white Christmases. But instead, we got the rain. And it was just cold and rainy. And yeah. And I went out to go get some food with some friends. And ended up not getting what I wanted. And I'm a brat. So I was all bratty for a portion of the night. But it was my birthday, so it was okay. The end.
That was pretty good. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
A lot of that probably was a true story, too.
No, that was totally true. Totally true. But you got to understand, this is like my 7th time playing this game.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to be good at it. I have to be all right at it, right?
That's true.
All right. Okay, so are you now ready to get into your life, Mike?
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. I'm just going to jump right into it.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with... Yeah, where did it all start? Where did Mike come from?
I was born in Taipei, Taiwan, and I lived there for about a good 8-9 years of my life. And I have an older brother, a mom and dad. They divorced pretty early when I was little. So I was actually growing up more so on my dad's side back in Asia. I didn't really live with my dad. I actually grew up at my grandfather's house.
Okay.
My aunt was there. I had three aunts over there that was living with us. My grandpa had a little cousin. So I went through kindergarten, you know, first grade and second grade, sort of living that lifestyle, just being away from my dad. So most of it was just school. And I was the only kid that was old enough to take care of my little cousin. Mm. So a lot of it was just, you know, work, school. It wasn't in a big city. It was away from everything. I mean, that was kind of a childhood that was very different from, I would say, most kids.
Yeah.
Just because most kids would be around their mom and their dads.
Right.
But I was kind of off distance doing some other stuff.
Was your brother not living with you?
No. So my brother actually had moved to America early.
Okay.
He was staying with my uncle here just because I think he was trying to get immigrated.
Okay.
So he came in early.
Yeah.
My mom was still working. My dad was still working. So at that time, I was basically taking care of myself. It wasn't until the third grade I had an opportunity to come see my brother in America. I ended up staying. So my uncle, he was really good at doing the immigration stuff, basically signed me up for a visa and was staying here for basically until now.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. First moved to L.A. Then I moved to San Jose after about a year in L.A. So I started fourth grade in San Jose. Without my mom still, my mom was still working in Taiwan. My dad was still working in Taiwan.
Oh.
But at the same time, I was with my uncle, my brother, and my grandma.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of a weird setup, but basically at that time, this was just a lot of nonsense going on with my parents' divorce.
Yeah.
I didn't really know how to, you know, make sense of it because you're a little kid. The adults really don't tell you the full story.
Right.
They just kind of try to hide it from you. They don't think that you need to know.
Yeah.
So like for me, I was basically just with my brother, and that was probably the biggest thing that I could ask for at that time. My uncle is really nice. He's a very, very nice dude. I really look up to him and the fact that he takes care of his whole family.
Yeah.
Besides just his immediate kids and whatnot.
Right.
I love my grandma. My grandma's a big big influence in my life, telling me how I should base, you know, my moral compass in life.
Mm-hmm.
So she's a big influence in my life as well.
Is the uncle and the grandma your mom's side or your dad's side?
That's my mom's side.
Okay.
I came here as a vacation, but I ended up staying.
Yeah.
But, you know, everybody felt like it was a good idea for me to stay.
Yeah.
So ended up staying. I learned English really quick. Took me about like a year and a half.
Yeah.
They took me out of that English as a second language class. And then from that point on, just been, you know, my brother, my grandma, you know, trying to figure out and assimilate to America.
Yeah.
Which is pretty different experience for most people. I think my experience in itself was just a lot of TV.
Yeah.
Talked to my older brother. I made some friends here and there. You know, did a lot of BMXing around San Jose.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Went to the library a lot, which is, you know, on the way back from school.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it was a good childhood. I think it was just different in the sense that I didn't see my mom until, like, the 7th grade.
Mm-hmm. Is that when she moved here?
That's when she moved here, yeah.
Okay.
At that point, it was just my mom and my brother and I living in this apartment in San Jose. Again, still trying to assimilate. My mom didn't quite get it. She didn't speak full English. It was just me and my brother really translating everything for her. So that part was actually pretty cool because, you know, I actually had to go to school. I had my mom and my brother, but I think things started getting weird when I got into like high school.
Yeah.
Just because I was, you know, trying to keep up with everybody, but, you know, at the same time, I just feel like I wasn't always able to keep up with everybody. So that's when things started getting shaky.
What do you mean, in school?
Yeah, in school and trying to keep up with the workload at school. I mean, that area in itself, I think, is a pretty competitive school area.
Yep.
Everybody wants to get good grades. And my family always wanted me to get good grades, but I really wasn't into it.
Right.
To tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think caused you to kind of fall behind? Obviously, there's the area and school was hard, but you're a smart guy. And like you said, yeah, if you wanted to, you could have definitely gotten good grades.
Right, right. And like, I think about it all the time. Like, if I wanted to, I could have been...
Harvard. I say that all the time about myself.
Yeah, I could have been a typical Asian American kid that went to, that has a nice degree right now or whatever. I guess what really just threw me off was a lot of the nonsense at the house. You know, growing up, there was just a lot of yelling, a lot of arguing, a lot of finger pointing. I mean, we weren't necessarily like the brokest people in the world, the poorest people in the world, but we definitely have a humble beginning.
Yeah.
It wasn't easy for mom to get work because she didn't speak good English.
Right.
At the same time, I think she was going through a lot of things with my divorce, my dad. And so she was trying to balance a couple of things in life. And I was more interested in just going out and doing nothing than going to school.
Right. I mean, let's talk about the social aspect of your life, how obviously your social life and your friends became very important in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think I've always been pretty friendly to people I meet, definitely an extrovert. So when I was growing up, I had a lot of good friends. The two Davies, as you know, my buddy Chris, Caleb, we all grew up in a kind of same neighborhood. So we just spent a lot of time out, you know, playing basketball, playing video games at each other's houses.
Yeah.
That to me at the time was probably definitely more cherished than my family members. Mm-hmm. So like 7th grade to 12th grade is basically just all about friends.
Yeah. So in those times, as you're falling behind in school, what kind of role did your, I guess, social life play into that?
I wanted to be different.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I think in that neighborhood, everybody wanted to be like a nice kid, do the nice things and go to classes and go to like tutor classes after. I just wasn't into all that shit.
Yeah.
You know, I was really more into just hanging out with friends and playing video games.
And being cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's where you and I are very similar. Like, we were both smart kids, but we chose that street smart route rather than book smart route.
I just feel like being smart at one thing instead of being smart at everything, I'd rather be the guy that's smart at everything. I want to be able to know history. I want to be able to know, you know, science. But at the same time, I want to know how to deal with people and like human emotions and things like that.
Yeah.
So that was a big part, like, of my growing up, just trying to make a lot of friends as possible, learning more from people.
Yeah. Okay, so you didn't graduate with us.
No, I did not.
I do want to get into, I guess, your, not issues, but I mean, you were a bad kid. Let's just put it out there. You were a bad kid in school. Where did that start? The rebellious side?
I mean, that's a good question. I got in so much shit so many times. I think most of it really just started in high school, man. I don't know. I had gotten expelled from school in eighth grade for talking shit to a teacher. I re-entered the same high school that everybody was supposed to go to, but I was in these programs for kids that are basically, I don't want to call them special needs, but they're emotionally different.
Right.
This program was set up for, I guess, those kids got in trouble. They had anger problems.
Delinquents,
basically. They put me in this fucking class. I basically was highly monitored at all given time.
Yeah.
I just started smoking weed at that time very heavily. And so I would basically skip class and go smoke weed during lunch and not come back for like 3-4 hours. Oh, shut the classes high as fuck.
Right.
I was basically like the guy selling weed at ninth grade. I would scooter around San Jose and drop off weed to people. And like, we had this park.
Yeah.
Which everybody was always at.
Parkies for life. Just kidding.
You were definitely there as well too. You know, with cigarettes that we find from older kids.
Yeah.
A lot of weed smoking. A lot of people doing like cough medicine.
Oh gosh.
Computer dust. Clean.
Right.
All kinds of stupid
stuff. That's right. And meth was pretty big.
Ecstasy was there too. Ecstasy. So just as a 14-year-old, 15-year-old, like, you shouldn't be doing shit like that. But somehow I got my hands on it.
Yeah.
I'm not gonna lie. When you're like 15 years old and you're a guy, all you want to do is dumb shit. I've done a lot of dumb shit. And
yeah.
Honestly, there's never meant to be bad. I never meant to cause harm.
Right.
I just want to be doing things that makes me happy. But sometimes that just, you know, people get upset.
So in your young adulthood, like adolescence, young adulthood, all that, what were the biggest challenges that you faced?
A couple things. Like, I was on probation super early when I was 15 years old. I was going through this time period where my probation officer wasn't very happy with me, so she put me on house arrest.
Why were you on probation?
I was caught stealing a car when I was 15 years old.
Okay. Is that the car that you drove into the lawn?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, is that another time?
That was a time where I joyrided somebody's car.
Oh.
Somebody's giving them the keys, and then I got caught for it, driving around the neighborhood, which is pretty stupid.
Okay. Okay, so going back to, okay, so you got caught stealing a car.
Yeah.
You're on probation and house arrest.
And then that whole time was like 16, 17, 18. It was just dealing with a lot of my probation officer going to court. That time was really tough. I wasn't going to school. I've already basically given up on school. And so I was full time going through this whole probation process as a kid.
Yeah.
My mom didn't speak good English, so she couldn't help.
Right.
It was mostly my brother and my uncle looking after me. I provoked it myself too, even though I was on probation. I know I shouldn't be doing dumb shit. I still went out. I still smoked weed. I still drank alcohol, which led to me being put on house arrest for a long period of time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gosh, I had completely forgotten about the house arrest.
Mm-hmm. And then I think right around that same time period, my mom and I just was not getting along.
Yeah, I remember.
Just arguments all day. So I was out in the streets. You know, at that point in time, I was basically just a fucked up kid.
Yeah. How do you think your mom's role in your life affected you? Because, of course, she was now finally here with you. But like you said, she wasn't able to contribute into kind of raising you because you were going through all these things. But she didn't really know what those things were.
I think that was the part that was the hardest, is mm-hmm. that I had friends in that same time frame that were getting kicked out of school, but their mom would come to school and save them from being expelled.
Right.
But my mom wasn't capable of doing the same thing because she didn't have... I mean, she tells me all the time, if we were in Taiwan, this would be a different story. She'd go in there and talk shit to everybody until I can be back into school.
Right.
But here, she didn't know what the procedures are, the policies are. So she just thought it was a lost chance. We couldn't, you know, just couldn't save me.
Yeah.
So she just let me basically fall into the system. And again, I don't blame her. It's not her fault. I mean, as I'm older now,
yeah,
I think about the shit I was doing. I probably myself today couldn't even get myself out of trouble.
Right.
No, language or not. No, it's just a lot of stupid shit. Going through expulsion hearings with the district. I was there with my family. It was just my mom and my brother. And they were saying all this shit. And we had to translate back to my mom.
Yeah.
You know, at the time, she just didn't understand, like, why am I the worst one when she see me and my friends, and she thought my friends were probably just as bad as I was.
Right.
And so that was hard. Living in that neighborhood, a lot of kids were well off and I was not.
Right.
That was tough too, because, yeah, you know, a lot of the kids, when they wanted, you know, new polo shirts and new Adidas shoes and
yeah,
when they wanted all the cool stuff, they can get it. And I was wearing hand-me-downs with my brother.
Yeah.
And like that whole concept to me of being like not as well off as other kids, that kind of threw me off a lot too. I almost wished mm-hmm. that if we had to immigrate to America without as much money, we should just grow up in an area where other people don't have as much money, because I would have fit in. Where right. At least felt like I fit in. But yeah, that wasn't the case. So I always felt like I didn't fit in. And so I had to cause all this trouble to create tension for myself.
Right.
But it's not my mom's fault.
Right.
You know, when you're young, you want to blame your parents.
Absolutely.
But as you get older, you think about it. It's like, why the fuck would I blame them?
Yeah.
All they wanted to do was take care of you. And I actually see that today as I'm getting older, that I have to repay her back.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
I feel like I owe it to her almost to live a more stable lifestyle today.
You do. She put up with your crap all those years. And then, did you get your act together?
I don't even know if I truly have gotten my act together today.
That's true. But you're doing pretty good.
I think the biggest change in my life has to been the move from San Jose to LA.
Okay.
Nothing was really positive until I decided to make a move.
When and how did you decide that the move was
It's you can't really decide on these things, I feel like. I feel like it's always a reaction to something happening in your life.
So what happened?
So I was working at this job at Ted Baker in Santana Row. This manager of mine decided to let me go because I was late for the third time. And so she wasn't happy about that. I've been working there for like a year or something like that. And I was really liking it. Me and her just didn't see eye to eye. And so one day I was late. She said it was the third time. She said, hey, you might as well go. I said, okay, I'll go. So got fired. I said, I don't really want to be in San Jose anymore. I just got off probation, adult probation for the second time. So I was like, all right, I think I'm done with this. So I decided to just move. I didn't tell anybody. I just went on Craigslist, found a room. Took with me like $500. I borrowed my brother's car, had a box of shit, and just took off. I believe it was November 1st of 2011.
Damn. Mm-hmm.
Took off, came here, no job, no nothing. Put down deposit for rent, for 1 month rent in some girl's room. And basically just started applying for jobs everywhere. At that time, it was like Christmas season, holiday season. It's pretty easy for me to get like a retail job just because I had experience.
Yeah.
So I got a job within like 2 weeks and just stayed since then. I was still like not getting paid a ton of money.
Right.
But now you know you have a job. You can at least stay for 3 more months or 6 more right. months. You know what I mean?
Yeah. What was the reaction of people back home when they started finding out?
It was like surprised, I guess. I didn't tell anybody.
Did you not tell me?
No, I didn't tell anybody. I didn't want to tell anybody in the fear that, oh, if it didn't work out, then I had to move back home. And it would always look stupid.
When did you tell me?
I think after I found the job, I made an announcement on Facebook.
That upsets me. I should have gotten a phone call, but that's fine. Whatever. Okay, so after you moved there, let's talk about getting into your actual career.
I've always wanted to be in business, I guess. So, like, I do a lot of sales jobs. So I was working at this company. It was a really small company. I think this is 2012. This guy, my age, We basically connected over Craigslist. He basically had a warehouse in downtown LA and said, hey, I'm starting this business. Why do you want to work here? I was like, I told him at the time I didn't have anything. I was just moved to LA for a year. I didn't have any kind of career, but I feel like I'd be very good at doing this job. And this guy gave me a chance. And so from that point there, it was me and two other guys starting a media company in downtown LA. We had no idea what we're doing. We had no logo, barely a website. This guy had some customers that was already paying him. And we started a business from there. I didn't know what the fuck I was doing.
Right.
I came from an environment where people walk up to me and be like, hey, can I buy this? I'm like, okay,
right.
I'll give you that. And I'll get paid off that. But now I'm switching over to this environment where it's nobody wants to talk to you. Nobody even knows who you are.
Yeah.
You barely have a business card. But yet now you have to go out there and say, hey, I work for this company. We want to partner up with you. We think that this could really help you. Give me a check for X, Y, and Z.
Right.
I was 25. I don't know. We had no direction at the time. But he actually had a vision. The company grew as more clients we got. I started learning more about sales in that job, more so anything.
Right. Of course. Yeah.
I think about a year and a half in, I was really getting business. Things were drumming up. I was doing very well. I was, you know, they were talking about promoting me and I was getting really close with the owner of the company. I think we got into an argument about a deal that was supposed to come in. I ended up getting really frustrated and basically saying, you know what, I don't give a fuck anymore. I'm fucking quitting. It was a bad day too, because that night I think I had an argument with my girlfriend over some other shit.
Yeah.
And basically the next day there was just, I had nothing. I had no job, no girlfriend.
Really?
I was just in LA and just still kind of trying to figure out like what I'm supposed to do. And I just went to this like real weird depression and just basically didn't pick up nobody's calls. And
oh, right. So this is, for those of you listening, this guy just completely dropped off the face of the earth. I couldn't get a hold of him. He wasn't calling me back. I couldn't get a hold of him on social media, nothing. And I had to call a friend of ours who was mutual friends with his girlfriend. And even then they were like not really getting information because Meg wasn't talking to him that much either. And it was a mess. I thought you died.
Yeah. A lot of people thought that.
So how long was that? Like,
I think it was like 2-3 months.
Right?
I don't know.
It was like 3 months. Yeah.
I guess like, I don't know. It was a lot of stress. I think at that time, like,
not trying to make it about me, but
no, for sure. I mean, I appreciate the fact that you're looking for me. And that's the cool thing about you, Christine, is you're always trying to reach out. But I think for me at the time, I didn't want to go back to San Jose as a failure. So I didn't know how to answer people. And I didn't want people to stress out. I feel like all the times I got in trouble in life, people always stress out and they're always like, oh my God, are you going to be okay? And I know it's, you know, I'm always going to be okay, you know, so I've done a lot of dumb shit where people freak out. So like when I feel like when I get in trouble again, I just don't want to alert anybody.
Yeah. I feel like as you're getting older, the quote unquote trouble you're getting into or quote unquote failures you have are not really failures. They really are progress, you know? And I think you realize that more now. As you are getting older, but for example, you ended up leaving a job, but you were not, like, you didn't punch your boss and get fired, right? You got into an argument over a deal. Like, it was a very adult situation that happened.
I mean, yeah, the shit I do now compared to the shit I was doing before is probably very different.
But people don't worry about you like they used to. I guess that's what I mean. Like, people don't think, oh, fuck, Mike, like, what are you going to do with your life now? It's never that anymore. If anybody's worried, it's kind of just like, oh shit, I hope you're okay. You know, let me know if you need anything type of thing, right? And I don't know if you see that yet.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Okay. I think people recognize that everything I'm doing now is more career focused.
A little too much sometimes.
I mean, yeah, I love my job. I love my career. I feel like in life, you got to have one thing that you're very good at. And that's the value you bring. I didn't really understand that as a kid, but I think as an adult, you realize that that's the thing that you bring to the table, but you got to make everything about that so that you can be highly focused on being better at that thing. I think of it like LeBron would treat basketball, or Kobe would treat basketball, or like Zuckerberg would treat coding and things like that. It just has to be that one thing you're really known for. Nice thing about being a sales career is that you don't necessarily have to be super highly educated from Harvard. I feel like more of it comes down to your ability to talk to people and show empathy and be inquisitive. I feel like I finally found a vehicle that's able to give me a voice and strength and an income and stability, you know?
Yeah.
What would have happened if I didn't get into all that shit before? that was one thing I did have to overcome, was being more mature about these situations. And that's not the only time where some shit's going to go down at work and you just have to react better to it, you know?
Yeah.
Granted, that guy's gone. He's not with the company anymore. I stayed around for much longer than he did.
What do you mean?
He quit, and the guy who bought the company from him, I ended up staying working with him.
Oh.
And so that guy's no longer with the company.
Okay. And then how long did you work there for after you went back?
2 years, probably.
And then did you get that promotion?
I did.
Good.
I did. I got promoted as like a sales manager.
Awesome. And then what?
I did that for about a year. So there wasn't really no money to be made in that business, to be honest with you. I think that company folded. We decided to part ways. I wanted to do something else.
Yeah.
That place folded real quickly after that.
Oh, wow.
I'm still friends with everybody there. But yeah. That one incident was definitely like a big turning point for me in LA for sure. Just because I wanted to focus and specialize in what I'm trying to do.
Right.
I didn't really have that direction before that.
Yeah.
It comes down to like the people that you know that really develops the life that you're here. And I was really close to that group of people.
Yeah.
And that just made me want to stay in LA and try to be successful even more.
Yeah. And then where are you now?
So now I'm not a manager. I'd said being a manager is probably not the best thing for me.
Okay.
I work with a group of people, which I do think is very cool.
Yeah.
I live here in Culver City, western side of LA.
Nice.
It's very beachy, very much laid back. A lot of good friends. Yeah. My company has really smart people.
Good.
I'm actually very much surprised that I ended up here in the first place. Definitely want to stick out and see how it goes.
Yeah.
I just know that if I didn't have the skill set I was trying to do what I'm doing now, I probably wouldn't make it. I feel like at the same time, every day I kind of think about what led up to this path. Mm-hmm. Like a lot of things could have gone wrong and never been able to, you know, to do anything remotely like this.
Yeah.
So I am pretty blessed in that sense.
I mean, aside from being blessed, I feel like it's really a big part of it has to do with you being able to just kind of pick up and being like, nope, gotta move on. You know what I mean? Because anytime you found yourself kind of in a hole, you didn't just stay in there. Maybe it took you some time to like mull it over or whatever, but you always said, no. Gotta go be something great. And I think you've always had that mindset. You know what I mean? That's why you always said things like Baller Mike Wang. Like, it's always kind of what you say to yourself and say to the people around you that gets you in that mindset. And I think that really speaks to the kind of person who you are and who you want to be. Okay, so while you were going through your struggles, whether it was in your childhood, your adolescence, or your adulthood, what was your support system like?
I mean, as a kid, I didn't really have anything but friends. Like you're there a lot, you know. As a kid, you kind of depend on friends to be supportive. I can tell you right now, like the very first time I got arrested, I didn't call my mom. I called a buddy of mine. Mm-hmm. She tried to help me get me out.
Yeah.
There were days where I didn't really have money to get things. I had to borrow from my friends.
Yeah.
There were days where I needed to get somewhere. I didn't have a car. My friends would take me there. When I was growing up, I think friends is a lot of influence what you do. That's my support. I think now my life's more dedicated to is my girlfriend. I think being in a relationship is very different from having a big group of friends, mm-hmm. but it's definitely something that gives me more stability as well too. So I've been with her for a long time now.
Yeah. So where do you think you are in your life journey?
I'm still hungry. I feel like I still want to do more, but I feel like now I have accomplished a lot of things I thought that I was going to do at this age.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Good.
I'm not like in the point where it's all done.
Yeah.
Right? Still a lot of time left. But right. I feel like the projection has gone more of an upward than just a plateau.
Good.
And I still want to do a lot of things like own my own business one day.
Yeah.
I still want to have like a nice condo to myself instead of like renting. Yeah. Things like that. But I mean, those things I feel like it's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. I kind of want to take a back step and talk about what kind of like emotional and mental effects you think your childhood had on you, like being away from your parents. I mean, really feeling like you only had your friends to depend on. That's not easy for a kid, you know?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, it definitely made me stronger as a person. I feel like I'm not a dependent person at all. It's weird for me to ask for stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I learned at a very young age that you definitely need to have resources in life so that shit doesn't happen. If you don't have resources in life, that's going to cause a lot of anxiety and issues and things like that. Without really having my parents helping me out, I still think that it's not about depending on the people. It's really just about creating opportunity from what the cards you've been dealt with. If you can't find an opportunity in something, then you're always going to see the downside of something. Mm-hmm. Again, you know, not having a dad around or like a mom that's, you know, very capable of handling a lot of the situations.
Right.
I think a lot of it just came down to time and letting time decide for itself and try to make a better of that situation.
Yeah. So where's your dad now?
I haven't seen the guy since I was 15. There was at one point when I was 15 years old, I was sent back as a punishment, a form of punishment.
Oh my God. Yes.
To go see him.
Yeah.
Even though when I was there, though, he wasn't really engaging. So he was never really there. But like as a kid, my mystic, I don't know if kids have this of their dad. They have this thinking about what they do in the daytime.
Yeah.
My thought was that this guy was out just a big time baller, slaying houses.
Yeah.
You know, making hella friends, partying all the time. Like that's what I thought he was doing. So when I was young without him around, that's what I thought I should be doing was to act like a big time baller and have a lot of friends and party all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that's why my mom and I did not get along, because she tells me every day, like, you're just like your fucking dad.
Right.
But now I think about it, I probably more or less was just acting on what I think I should supposed to be doing.
Yeah. Man, do you still keep in touch with that side of the family?
No.
Oh, wow. So that was really the last time you talked to them?
Yeah. I mean, I think family is who you choose your family to be.
Yeah. I'm with you. Okay. What do you think has been the biggest growth within yourself from when you were in your early 20s to now?
Oh, that's a good question. Mm-hmm. Early 20s was kind of a fucked up time.
Yeah.
Just because a lot of shit has happened.
Yeah.
As you know, I was locked up. Mm-hmm. I was in jail for a little bit. You couldn't visit me. Mm-hmm. I was on probation for a lot of months after that. I was going through court for a couple felony cases that I'd done, and it was just a lot of bullshit from 20 years old to 25.
Yeah.
But I think at that time, when people are down, I think, I mean, it's hard to see like what's going to blow over at the end of everything. When shit happens to you, I think that's when you really start to kind of think about what I'm going to do when the shit blows over.
Yeah.
I have a very strong belief that it's always going to rain, but it's never going to rain forever.
Right. I like that.
When I was 21, I was very much in the court system trying to figure out if I'm going to ever be like a normal person again, not have to deal with police officers and things like that. But at the same time, I kind of knew that if you focus, you write shit down. Like I have a journal that I kept for a very long time. When all this shit happened.
Oh, wow.
I just know that if you just think about what should be happening after all this is done, it's almost like a carrot at the end of the stick.
Yeah.
Just focus on that. Everything else will work itself out.
Yeah. Can we talk about your journal?
Yeah.
Do you still journal?
No, not anymore.
Okay. And how did you benefit from that when that was happening?
I think journaling just gives you closure for the day. I mean, you're obviously not done for the day, but we can recollect and rethink and re-strategize the next day. That's a big part of growth.
How long were you doing that for?
Probably about a good 4 years.
Wow.
I'm still putting highlights in there.
Yeah.
It started basically at my journey moving from San Jose after probation, after getting fired, to Los Angeles up until now.
Wow. Okay.
I have dates, timelines, goals. I'm a big believer that if you had written down a day that you want to achieve something, and you build up a journal towards that day, that's a really good way to get some of the things that you want accomplished.
I love that.
Yeah, power of thought.
Yeah, I never knew this about you.
Dude, I was struggling for a while living in LA. I didn't make a lot of money, but I did what I love. I knew that I have to find something better. And so in my mind, I was always training myself to look for better things, bigger opportunities. But at the same time, you want to track down progress. It's good for relieving ideas, you know?
Yeah.
I have pictures, graphs. Hopefully I'll make a book out of it someday.
Yeah. I hope there's at least a couple mentions of me in there.
Yeah, 100%.
Yes, made it. Okay, cool. Well, cool, man. Can we switch gear for a second and go to the advice segment?
Yeah, sure.
Ask Choi. Okay, it reads, Dear Christine, this happened a few months ago and I just can't seem to shake it. I was out to dinner with my boyfriend. We'd been together for 2 years and we have a very loving relationship. Before we sat down at our table, he was at the bar grabbing a couple drinks for us. There was a group of girls, 3 or 4 girls, and one of them went up to him and had a conversation with him. When he got back to me, I asked him what that was about. He said she asked for his number, but he obviously told her he has a girlfriend and came back to me with our drinks. Lucky for me, they ended up getting a table in plain sight of us. The whole time during dinner, I could sense the girls looking over at our table and looking at me up and down. This made me feel extremely uncomfortable and really insecure. Maybe I was imagining things, but I swear I heard them say things along the lines of, she's not even cute, to each other. I know that my boyfriend loves me the way I am and that he thinks I'm beautiful, but I've always felt that he was out of my league. And after all these months, I find myself feeling like strangers are wondering what he's doing with me. How do I deal with something like this? Obviously, my boyfriend hasn't done anything wrong here, but I'm even starting to feel a little resentment toward him now. Help.
That's a mess.
That's a lot. I think this is a pretty solutionless situation other than her building up her own self-worth, right?
Sure.
But I do think this is something that she can have an honest conversation with her boyfriend about. He'll probably laugh and call her silly and say, you're beautiful, and blah, 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 blah. But I think in this case, maybe he might have to do a little more to make her feel good about herself.
Maybe this girl is just very not confident at all whatsoever.
But that comes from somewhere, right? Don't you think a right partner can build you up, like you find your ride or die, and then you never feel that insecurity with them because you feel that you just are in it together?
I mean, listen, I think that girl should talk to the boyfriend, right? I think that girl should realize her man's there with her, and there's a reason why her man's sticking around with her. But I guess you're right. A guy should be building her up at all time.
Yeah.
And giving compliments and making sure that she's secure and feels strong about, about everything.
Of course, I'm talking to a guy here, so it's a little different. But I think that's a good thing, because a lot of times the guys don't see the girl side and girls don't see the guy side. I don't know if you're aware of this, but women are naturally very insecure of themselves. I think, sadly, we do need constant reminders that we're okay.
Just okay?
No, like, I'm doing okay.
Oh, okay.
Because there's so many different things running through our heads. Like, how do we look? Are we talking intelligently? We're always inside our own head. And I mean, if you're in a committed relationship like this person is, I think the importance would be communication and telling the boyfriend, hey, this is how I've been feeling. I know you did nothing wrong, but I don't know. I can't help how I feel.
Right.
I mean, flip it. Say this was a guy writing in saying, I am with this girl who I think is completely out of my league. Some guy came up to us and blatantly hit on her in front of me and she laughed it off. And now I feel like shit. What should I do?
I think that happens to a lot of guys.
Yeah, what advice would you give to them? Because it's similar. It's a similar situation, just putting it into a male perspective.
I mean, that's definitely happened to me before where I'll be somewhere with my girlfriend and some guy just walks up to her and says, hello, hey, what's your name? Stuff like that. But I kind of see that as a compliment. Is that a thing?
That is a compliment. That's great. Yeah.
It's a compliment, right?
That's true. That's a good way to look at it.
That's why I struggle to see the female version of like being insecure about it. I feel like it really would be a compliment.
Yeah. We just get into our own heads, I guess. That's kind of refreshing to see what you think, because I do agree with you. Because sometimes it is a compliment and you should think like, yep, I got that. Not you bitches, you know?
Yeah.
Cool, man. Let me just do a couple of closing questions here. What brings you the most joy right now?
Helping people. But one time in my life where it was all about doing things for people to get for my own self gain. Uh-huh. Now it's more or less doing things for people to help for their gains. My job is helping people. My day-to-day is helping the people I work with. I come home and I help my family. And if I could do more, I really would. I'd rather be helping people.
Yay. Love that. Okay. So to someone out there that might be going through similar hardships as you did in your past, what would you say to them? And where would you recommend that they start the healing process?
I would say that if you ever feel like there's nothing else that really matters, I would say you need to step back and think about what could be the opportunity and what you face.
Right.
And just really think about, you know, when this is all said and done, what kind of a person am I going to be? Do I stay the same person I was prior to, or do I want to be a better person?
Yeah, I love it. Okay, so I wanted to just say I am so proud and happy to see, you know, the person you have become and are becoming. And I mean, when you know somebody since they're like 13, it's easy to keep that 13-year-old in your mind rather than just watch, like, seeing them for who they are at 30, right? And having sat here and talked to you today was so amazing, because there's a lot of things about you that I found out today that I didn't know before. One of them being, honestly, I didn't realize how much of an optimist you've become. It seems like a lot of these hardships that you went through really did drive you to look at the potential good that can come in your life. And look at you, you're doing it, you know? So I wanted to say thank you again for coming on today, and that I am proud to be your best friend. And yeah, looking forward to the rest of our lives.
Thanks, Christine.
All right, well, you have a fantastic day. Bye, Mike.
Bye.
Okay, well, there is another episode of Choices. Don't forget to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, all at Choices Podcast. And also send me your letters and voice memos for the Ask Choice Advice segment so we can share our thoughts with you. All right. Thanks again for joining me, and I will talk to you guys next week. Okay, thanks. Bye.